Hello and welcome. You're listening to Connected and Ready, an ongoing conversation about innovation, resilience, and our capacity to succeed, brought to you by Microsoft. I'm Gemma Milne. I'm a technology journalist and author, and I'm going to be exploring trends around how companies are adapting to a disrupted world and preparing for tomorrow. We're going to speak to the innovators who are bringing products, operations, and people together in new ways. In today's episode, I'm chatting to Mo Tanabian, Vice President and GM of Azure Edge Devices at Microsoft, about why emerging technologies such as Intelligent Edge, Intelligent Connected Sensors, and IoT are expanding what's possible. We explore the most common current use cases of IoT. We look at how those that are adopting emerging technologies are realizing the most benefit. And we talk about what every organization should think about when implementing IoT solutions at scale. Mo, thank you so much for coming and joining us on the show. Why don't you start by giving us a little bit of an introduction to yourself and what you get up to?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me. My name is Mo Tanabian, and I lead a team within Azure for Microsoft. It's called Azure Edge Devices, and that goes from small devices that are battery operated to devices that are considered typical IoT devices and bigger devices that are server and infrastructure and everything in between. The distinction about these devices are two things. One is we connect all of them to Azure. And the second thing is, while we do first-party Microsoft-branded devices as dev kits, the real scale comes from our OEM partners. They go and take our dev kits as a blueprint, and they build their own differentiated devices. But all of those scale devices also, they're very easily connectable to Azure.
Yeah, so let's actually rewind back a little bit, because this concept, Internet of Things and Edge and all these words that people keep hearing about can perhaps be a little bit nebulous for the slightly uninitiated. What makes all this possible? Can you break down the sort of component parts for us? What do we mean when we're talking about Internet of Things?
Sure. So let's decompose the abbreviation. IoT, Internet of Things. So it's about internet and it's about things. And historically, when we built things, they were isolated. They were in their local environment. And if we wanted to get some information out of them or do something with them, we had to send a human operator there. Once the internet or connectivity came about and became omnipresent in our life, we saw this opportunity that, hey, we basically can put a connection to these things, whether it's a machine on a factory floor, it's a shelf in a warehouse, it's a hospital bed in a hospital, or it's a car driving on the street. When that connection is coupled with the sensor on the device itself, all of a sudden, we can get a whole interesting stuff out of it, and we can remotely monitor, observe, especially when cloud computing came about. This opened up a whole new set of possibilities that we could sense and observe. Then we realized there is actually more that we can do. We can run analysis on these data that are coming in, and we can send some signals back to the machine, to the hospital bed, to the car, to do some actuations. Now they have the full circle. So if I want to decompose Internet of Things, is the thing itself, generally speaking, there is a sensor or set of sensors. There is the connectivity that brings it back to the cloud. There is a bunch of applications that run and process these data that come from the thing. And then there are some actuations that go back to the device, and the device can do interesting stuff. That kind of sums it up.
It's always good to try and get these, I guess, broken down explanations, because sometimes they can become a bit of a catchphrase and a bit of hype. Let's build on this a little bit. What are some of the, I guess, current IoT trends and some of perhaps the top use cases that you're seeing organizations leveraging in their adoption?
Well, it depends on the type of industry you look at it. The industries that we see that they're benefiting immensely from digital transformation powered by Internet of Things are manufacturing, in particular, retail, healthcare, power and utilities, oil and gas, among others. And depending on each industry, there are very distinct set of hero use cases. For example, in manufacturing is production flow monitoring. In retail, generally is observing and getting insight about things, how they move it through the supply chain and optimizing that. In healthcare, believe it or not, it's tracking inventory of items within a hospital or in a healthcare system. In power and utilities, is generally maintenance of our grid assets. In oil and gas, is primarily security and predictive maintenance. So there are 3, 4, 5 hero use cases. But there are common threads across all of them. If you look at why people are adopting IoT, the primary reason across the board is safety and security. Then the next to safety and security is business process optimization and optimizing the operations. Then defect detection automatically and acting on it, quality assurance, increasing productivity of employees. These are the top four or five basically use cases that go across the board.
Let's talk a little bit about intelligent connected sensors, because I know this is something that you're particularly passionate about. And I guess at the moment, when we talk about the evolving conversation around IoT, this is a key part of it. How is this sort of combination of these intelligent connected sensors alongside IoT, edge AI, all of these newer sort of ideas that are coming into the fore, driving new use cases and customer value?
So if you look at IoT with a lens and look at it closer, you see that in reality, Internet of Things is Internet of Sensors. At the end of the day, data from anything should come from a sensor. And sensor is a broad term here. It could be a camera, it could be a microphone, it could be a vibration sensor, it could be a temperature sensor, but it could be also a push button or the device basically opening a mechanical arm or closing a mechanical arm. Depending on that sensing, the data is generated, and that's interesting in a lot of cases. And we like to observe it, and we like to monitor it. Sensing is great, but when you can make a sense of sensing, no pun intended, that becomes so much more valuable. And that's where kind of coupling sensing with AI comes in. We've historically run AI algorithms and models in the cloud, and we've been very successful in getting these insights and figuring out what the sensor data means. But the last few years, all of a sudden, we have gained a lot more capability to run the AI models right at the sensor level, where the data is connected. And that's helpful because if there is no connectivity, if there is intermittent connectivity, if latency is important, if cost of transporting all that data to cloud and processing it is prohibitive for the ROI justification, all of a sudden, this edge AI coupled with the sensor becomes so much interesting. But why? Let's look at it from a really critical factor and critical pair of eyes. It's all about economics. AI changes the economic formula for IoT. Let me give you an example and then I'll bring it back to AI. About 40, 50 years ago, we learned that when we combine software and silicon chips, we can significantly reduce the cost of a very important economic input, and that was arithmetic. Arithmetic was done by humans all the time for as long as we remember. But with software and silicon together, we found a really cheap way to do arithmetic even better than humans. And because of that, everywhere humans used to do arithmetic, we use silicon and software in calculators, in spreadsheets, computers, PC, and personal computing industry just exploded and skyrocketed. And it was about cheap arithmetic. But then we did something amazingly interesting. Problems that weren't arithmetic based, we turned them into arithmetic problems because arithmetic based on silicon and software was cheap. Take photography. It was a chemistry problem for a long, long time, for almost a century. We turned it into arithmetic with digitized photos or video or all of those things. And we start processing arithmetic because arithmetic was cheap. The same thing is happening in Internet of Sensors plus AI. This time, the economic input is prediction. It's an incredible economic input and very important. Humans have been the only beings who could do prediction. Now, sensors coupled with AI can do prediction and can do interesting things. And we are doing a lot of that kind of replacing where humans used to do things like defect detection and anomaly detection, like a technician would go and listen to a machine's how it sounded, and then we said, yeah, I think we should change this wheel bearing. All that is happening now with this coupling of, for example, in this case, a microphone and AI. So we're using AI for those things, but where that next level is super interesting. And that's where we are turning non-prediction problems into prediction problems, because prediction based on sensors and IoT and AI is cheap now. Take driving, for example. A fairly complex cognitive task. Humans can be the only ones can drive. So far, we don't have anything else, any other thing that can do driving. But in reality, you can bring down and turn driving into a prediction problem. An autonomous vehicle, really, all it has to do, it needs to look at its connected sensors, its IoT of sensors around it, sense the environment, and make a decision to go faster, slower, turn left or turn right. That's it. Now, the prediction problem is, based on the setup, what would a good human driver do? We turn driving, a fairly complex cognitive task, into a prediction problem. Now we can use the cheap AI based on cheap prediction based on sensors and AI. And all of a sudden, the whole economic of driving is changing. And this is happening in hospitals. This is happening in manufacturing. I've seen it happening in warehouses, incredible in cities, houses, homes, everywhere.
So you spoke a little bit about turning non-prediction problems into prediction problems and how much value that sort of transformation can give us. But how do you do that? How do you spot a problem that has the potential to be a prediction problem that isn't currently looked at in that way? What does that sort of transformation look like to you?
Oh, that's $1 million question. For the most part, the innovation will come as a result of genius work that people will do and turn their problems into prediction problems. We just need to give them the platform to do that. And I think in Azure, we've done that and we're doing that constantly. It's like trying to predict, for example, Spotify in early 1980s. It was hard to do that. But generally speaking, if we have tasks that a human operator can do in 5 seconds or less, those are good candidates to generally use an AI coupled with sensors. If I'm a product manager in any business, I would go around and I would look at people, what type of tasks are people doing that requires human attention for 5 seconds or less? And those are golden nuggets of business value that edge AI-based prediction can bring and can unlock.
That's a brilliant way of bringing to life, I guess, the power of not just IoT, but AI coupled with IoT, this idea of turning into a prediction or an economic problem. I want to talk a little bit more about edge as well, because I think this is something that's still, particularly when you couple it with discussions around, you know, 5G, we start to see why we need these kind of technologies and why they're so powerful. So, you know, I always like the sort of example of, I guess, the connected city. If you have too much latency or slow internet or whatever, you're not going to be able to have a nice reactive connected city. You're going to have a delayed city of some degree. But also with edge, my understanding is it's also good for privacy too, because you're not having to do so much of the exchange. So can you tell us a little bit about what edge is and how it kind of plays into this whole AI coupled with IoT coupled with sensors equation?
Very interesting developments are happening and very fast. So edge in reality is just a locality where the compute happens, where the storage happens, when the data processing happens. And when we talk about edge, we generally mean that all of these happen closer to where the data is generated. And as a result, you have all of those benefits you mentioned. There are certain instances that there is no connectivity, like, oh, there is very little connectivity through satellite, like an old rig in somewhere in the middle of the ocean or close to places that it's hard to provide connectivity. Sometimes the sensor data requires so much bandwidth that it's economically prohibitive to transport all of that data to a public cloud and start using it and get insights through. Sometimes regulatory aspects like privacy requirements prohibits us from transporting that data across border lines, across geographies and those things. Sometimes it's just user preference. People want to hang on to their data. And so for all of that reason, processing and creating value through prediction based on AI, through other means, when it happens at the edge closer to where the data is generated, it's a lot more valuable than if you ship it to the cloud. Obviously, cloud can and will be always the orchestration engine for all of these things. Going through this edge, there is this notion of how fast can we transport data to somewhere that we can do processing. Maybe there is a hybrid model, an aggregation of sensors and data come from somewhere closer to sensors, not quite data centers in the public region in the cloud, somewhere in the middle. And the advancement of 5G is delivering a great deal of bandwidth, like an orders of magnitude higher bandwidth because of the frequency band that 5G operates in, with much lower latency, with much lower cost of connectivity per bit transmitted and transported. And that opens up a whole new ways of doing business. Imagine all of a sudden 5G cameras are basically connected to a set of poles in a smart city example that you mentioned, and they can in near real time feed the data back to an edge processing, for example, a telco carrier's central office that is just less than a mile away from the sensor itself, and it can operate it. And without any delay or much delay, as I said, near real time, can deliver some actuation to, hey, now the signal should go red or should go green. These things are not easily doable right now with 4G. So 5G is opening up a new set of ways for us to process the data, not quite at the sensor, not quite in the cloud, but somewhere in the middle that is economical, is fast, and it's still very interesting.
So we've mentioned this word latency, which comes up a lot in conversations around IoT. Can you tell us a little bit about what do we mean by that? You know, why do the seconds matter when it comes to reducing the effects of latency?
Well, the seconds matter, but even milliseconds matter in this context. Let's say a car driving on a street and there is a police officer that is waving people to from one lane to another lane. We need to make decisions on lane change pretty quickly, or there is an object or a human in front of an autonomous robot on a warehouse that is moving goods from one part of the warehouse to the another part of the warehouse. Once you sense that there is this obstacle, you need to react on it fairly quickly. You cannot send the data somewhere and wait and trust the internet. The round trip is less than 50 milliseconds. So technologies like 5G are giving us that comfort, that guarantee that within milliseconds, we can send this, we can process it, we can get back the actuation. The responsiveness becomes a lot more important in mission-critical applications and use cases, in use cases where danger and safety is involved, that from the time that sensing happens to the time that is processed and actuation is determined, this is not beyond a few milliseconds. So it's critical, it's life-saving in many occasions.
Let's talk a little bit about the current time that we're in, both in terms of being 2020 and technology is advancing at a really fast rate, but also we're living in the middle of a pandemic at the moment. And to me, IoT and everything it kind of enables seems to have two key things that could be really important and useful for particularly in these pandemic times. The first being prediction, so being able to react to big events, but also automation, you know, not necessarily needing as much human contact in places like factories, for instance, where we've been seeing outbreaks of the virus. So can you tell me a little bit about how the role and the use cases of IoT has developed in recent times, whether it's to do with the pandemic or just to do with the fact that technology is so much more advanced now than it was, say, 5 years ago?
Sure. It's a really good question. Just let me set the context with what we're seeing right now going and passing through COVID and this pandemic. We've seen a good chunk of IoT projects being accelerated, about over 33% of them. And this is interesting, exactly confirming what you're saying. And about 40% of them, the level of investments, the companies and the businesses have maintained the same level of investment pre-COVID. When you look at it and you see why now everybody's trying to see where they can probably cut costs and lower their operational expenses, why are we seeing this jump in investments and increasing investments? It's such a great portion of the IoT projects. And when you look at it, it's exactly the loop that you mentioned, that you have the sensor, you can send the data to a processing application or solution, then you can create some insights. And based on that insights, you can do some actuation or automation, as you phrased it. That is super interesting because all of a sudden, you can do things without having humans risk their health or life because they need to be in close contacts, for example, with each other. But then one would ask, so why IoT is all of a sudden the solution for this? I want to talk about how IoT fits into or a platform from a hyperscale cloud provider like Azure and other guys in the market, how they accelerate value creation in these types of situations like COVID. Let's look at a value chain analysis. So if we start imagining in our mind from left to right, let's see, for example, hospitality industry, hoteling industry. So there is properties that the buildings that people go in their hotel rooms. Then there is the brand and trust, Marriott's of the world and, I don't know, Hilton's of the world. Then there is basically reservation. And then there is the guest and the customer. So four blocks, right? What Airbnb did, anyone's spare room is property. So I'm going to modularize that. Historically, in hospitality industry, property, trust, the brand itself, and the reservation have been kind of integrated together. Reservation has been a little modularized because of Travelocity and Expedia, but definitely the first two. What Airbnb did, broke these two integrated pieces, the property and the brand, and said, anybody's spare room is property. What I'm going to do across the value chain, these four blocks, I'm going to modularize property. I'm going to integrate trust and branding plus reservation. So it broke some integration in the value chain and integrated other parts of the value chain. And through doing this, created enormous amount of value for itself and for a lot of customers, and almost is destroying the value for the traditional configuration of the value chain. And this is exactly what's happening with IoT. Right now, you can do all of the things that I mentioned and we talked about through a lot of dollar and money and time and expertise, if you have all of those, to connect a sensor to the internet, to create an application, to create insights, and then do automation and actuation. But it's very expensive. It's very time consuming. It requires talent that not all businesses in the world have. So what we are doing with Azure, we're integrating all of these pieces. We're integrating the device, the hardware. A typical IoT solution starts with, this is my use case. So I need this type of device. And every device has a piece of silicon. So I got to go and buy this. What silicon do I get? A lot of people have no clue. What is the right hardware configuration for my IoT device? No clue. These are all barriers to entry. Then how do I integrate it into Azure or other cloud providers? These have been historically the barriers. So through the value chain, what we're doing, we're integrating a bunch of these things. We're making it super easy for people to say, oh, I want to connect my light pole or my meter or my CNC machine, whatever, to internet and to IoT and Azure. You can basically do that right now in hours, technically, with almost no technical skills, like almost low-code, no-code options that we have, for example, in IoT Central. So we are integrating a bunch of pieces that were modularized historically, and they were barriers to entry. We're lowering the barrier to entry significantly, and we're democratizing this by integration. So through this integration, we're opening up the opportunity for a lot of people to use IoT for any type of business problem that they have to solve it. And I think when you look at it from value chain, all of a sudden you see why all of a sudden the IoT that is integrated, that is easy to use, that doesn't require hundreds or tens of millions of dollars, doesn't require PhDs, is something that people are leveraging in pandemic time, especially when there is a need, when there is a struggling moment.
Yeah, let's dive into some of these various different kind of business examples, because on this podcast, we really love to dive into case studies and hear how these amazing technologies are being used in practice. So maybe you could share some examples of what a few organizations have been able to accomplish with IoT. You know, what problem are they trying to solve? What solutions or combined technologies did they use? And ultimately, what benefits were they able to realize?
Sure. I kind of start focusing on that magical combination of sensors or IoT of sensors plus edge AI, because those are creating a lot of interesting value and solutions. And I'll give a couple of examples within pandemic context and other examples outside of pandemic context. The simple ones are enforcing, for example, social distancing. Right now, we have customers with a few cameras. By the way, we're going to announce some of those intelligent cameras as part of Azure and Azure Edge in December. So if listeners to this podcast want to find out, get a hold of us and we'll get you hooked up for that event. You don't want to miss it. So social distancing, stores, warehouses, anywhere that a bunch of people are there, we can now easily, with just a few cameras, figure out if there's social distancing is being observed, is being properly practiced. And if not, we can easily basically respond to it. We can do face mask detection. These are like no-brainer things. But some really interesting examples, a lot of our retailers. Now, in the US, a curb pickup has become a very well-accepted way of shopping. You basically go online, you order your products, you go to, I don't know, Target, and you don't go into the store. They bring it out for you, and they leave the shopping cart right by your car. You go, you put your stuff in the trunk, and you leave. Right now, this is the way it's practiced. You go in, and someone asks you, okay, what's your name, and all of that stuff. We are basically implementing a system right now for one of our customers that as you enter the shopping mall, which the store is, we read your license plate through an intelligent camera. Again, sensors plus AI. See how this is unconnected. These three together are magical. And then we know you're coming in, and right away we send a message to the back operation room that, hey, this customer is coming in, and they walk out with your shopping cart. As you're pulling into your spot, and we tell you, go to this spot, your shopping cart is parked there. All of a sudden, there is no human-to-human risk of transmission of any virus. And all of a sudden, these curbside, basically, spots that are now become very premium because a lot of people are using it and it is becoming the bottleneck. We're increasing the efficiency of usage of these spots significantly by just one camera, one connected camera. So that's another example. Outside of COVID, just numerous examples. I won't be able to try to tell you all of them, but one of the coolest ones that I think I saw was a farm, a large farming operations. They do farm sweet potatoes. And over time, they used to use mechanical machines to sort sweet potatoes. And they were not accurate. They were not quite there. With one of the devices that we're going to announce in December, what they did, they just used a computer vision model to look at the sweet potato as they're moving across the conveyor belt and figure out what the size is and which bin they should go into. Again, the use case itself is doable for companies who have skills, who have time, and who have money. Anybody can do this. But the key point here is this farm had none of those, and they did it on a weekend. They received our camera. They installed it. We've made some design choices to making installation into that setting very easy. They trained the model, and they plugged it into their operations on a weekend, in 2 days. That's what I call when we've integrated across the value chain. We've taken away the requirements for money, dollar, and all of that.
I think at IoT, whenever people sort of explain some of these examples, it almost seems, obvious. You know, the idea of a car coming in, you read the plates, and then, you know, you bring the food out and you do it efficiently. It seems like, use the word magical, but I always think these sort of solutions, IoT can seem like the solution to so many different kind of problems because of the sort of simplicity of idea, shall we say. But what kind of hurdles or roadblocks might organizations face when they start trying to think about implementing IoT solutions? And how would they overcome sort of common issues when it comes to starting off?
The problem is generally stitching these pieces together is difficult, is costly. And when it's costly, and cost comes in two forms, time and dollar. When it's costly, all of a sudden, the business viability and return on investment becomes unclear. And as a result, this becomes a little bit of a, hey, this is great, but really it's not doing something that I can scale with because it's not economically viable. So those are the two main things. The third thing that is very critical is a lot of people build a POC, a proof of concept. A lot of people build a prototype. But the moment they want to go and scale this into hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands, sometimes millions of devices, then it requires a set of integration into their business processes, a set of operational excellence to make sure you detect, you monitor these devices, then you can predict their failure and you can do something about it. That's where a lot of projects break, going from POC to a scale deployment. And it's hard. It's not because people don't know how to do it. That's the case. But the reason they don't know how to do it is because it's a difficult technical challenge. And we have, again, solved a lot of those problems. So to answer your question, those are the three main reasons that IoT projects don't scale generally.
What would be your advice then for companies that have either already played around with POCs or thinking about trying to implement IoT more at scale across organizations? How should they think about attacking this? What kind of questions should they be asking? What's the sort of first steps here?
The examples that we've seen that they succeeded and they generated good level of value for their businesses are examples that most of these POCs start from the innovation organization or CTO organization in a silo. And when the POC starts to work, and they're very interesting, generally speaking, they create wows and they feel very super cool. Then when they get other people involved in the organization, when they get operations involved, when they get finance involved, when they get product involved, customer service involved, then it becomes, oh my goodness, this is a lot of work to do the integration. So one of the best practices that we've seen that get the whole company early on involved and get their voice heard, get the POC to be a cross-company POC rather than a local 5 engineers or 10 engineers working for 6 months to get something done. That's interesting, but it's generally, usually it's not scalable. That's one thing. The second thing is, I would also encourage people to use integrated low-cost solutions as much as possible to prove that there is business value before diving into building a lot of technology. Start from business value rather than start from technology. Even though the integrated solutions, full integrated solution may give you a narrower scope, but you can always extend the scope and fine-tune it and adapt it to your specific business problem. So basically, get to your business value validation as fast as you can, rather than building a lot of technology pieces that you later may realize that they're not applicable.
Let's finish off with a little bit of future gazing. When you kind of look ahead in this world of IoT, edge, AI, and the sort of integration of all of these technologies, what's exciting you? In what ways do you think industries are going to advance as a result of utilizing in the best way possible these technologies moving forward?
Sure. Well, IoT is moving fast. And what is making it really compelling piece of our business in the future is how it is evolving. Obviously, Internet of Things started from things and from assets. So we got assets connected, whether it was a truck, it was a manufacturing floor or hospital bed. Now we're moving towards Internet of basically environments. Now, a bunch of assets, bunch of things within the same environment, they are interconnected. The data that they generate, they coalesce. We run insights and analytics on top of a bunch of them together. And there is orchestration within the same, basically, set of things within the same business framework. And that's how generally we work in real human life. We have sensors, we have eyes, we have ears, we have basically other sensing mechanisms, and we process the data, and then we start interconnecting with other humans. So there is a bunch of events that we perceive from our sensory mechanisms. Based on those events, we go and talk to each other, and hey, do this and do that. And that creates a loop into actuation by us or by other people. Now we're seeing the same thing is happening within the IoT as it's evolving from Internet of Things to Internet of Environments. But then we're getting even beyond that. And I think that's what's really getting interesting, that now these Internet of Environments that are being developed by various hyperscale cloud providers and other technology providers, when they start to interact with each other. So there is the Internet of Ecosystem of Environments. And that is happening, and standards will come to make these happen. We saw that when telephone networks started to evolve. First, it was within the same neighborhood or city. Then we started to connect cities together, and it became kind of telephony of our cities. And then different countries had different telephone systems for their own cities, and they started connecting to each other, and now you can easily pick up the phone or send a text to anyone on the planet. That's how IoT is evolving. We're getting there.
That's a really exciting note to end on, Mo. Thank you so much for sharing so much of your expertise about where the technology's been, what it's currently looking at, and now where it's going to. So thank you so much for joining us on the show.
A pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That's it for this week. Thank you so much for tuning in. You can find out more about Mo's work and indeed some of the broader themes we discussed today in the show notes. If you enjoyed the episode, please do take a few moments to rate and review the podcast. It really helps other people discover the show. And don't forget to hit subscribe to tune in next time to continue our conversation about innovation, resilience, and our capacity to succeed.